Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tate Blake-Raylian along with Tom Luongo. This week, the playoffs aren't necessarily going the way that Tom and I would like, but that won't stop us from talking about it. Plus, there's new developments in the Phoenix situation, even as we're podcasting. We'll tell you all about it on The Rink. Tom, I don't mind saying it one bit. This past round of the playoffs did not go quite the way I wanted it to, and I don't think it quite went the way that you wanted it to either.
No, actually, even round one didn't go the way I wanted it. So this whole Stanley Cup playoffs for me has been like a train wreck in slow motion. And as Pittsburgh and the Wings grind their way slowly, inevitably towards a rematch, which I have less than zero interest in.
Right. Yeah, me too. It's one of the few areas that I would actually use the word parody and wish that it would come true. I think I actually wound up a little bit better than you did in this last one, because I do enjoy seeing the Blackhawks in it. But after game one of this Western Conference Finals round, I'm not so sure how in it they are.
Yeah. I didn't see game one. I unfortunately was on my way. I was traveling Sunday afternoon, so I couldn't.
You might have been pleased to see the first two periods. In fact, I was kind of pleased to see the way that the first two periods were working them their way out. The Hawks were actually skating with the Wings, and that all ended in the third period, unfortunately. And so 5-2 victory for the Wings as they climb inevitably again towards the Stanley Cup Finals. But before we get on to this current round, I think we should kind of take a look back at some of the way that the previous round ended. Starting with, I think, the most anticlimactic Game 7 in the history of the known universe, which was the Caps Pens.
It was pretty horrible. Yeah, it was. The Caps were obviously extremely either nervous or amped up on too much adrenaline or whatever it was, but they were a mess.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate to watch Varlamov, who had such a great run through the first two rounds, have such a less than memorable game seven. But, you know, like everything else, live and learn. And
to the point where Jose Theodore went back in fact. And that's that was a painful sight. I can't imagine how the fans felt about that. The actual true and blue Caps fans, because, you know, here's the guy who kind of got you to this point and then gets yanked for the playoffs after the first game. And then your hope and savior and Varlamov is it just kind of melted down in the last couple of games, I'd say.
I think the pressure started to get to him a little bit, and I'm sure that the wear and tear mentally had to have gotten to him. Yeah. It was the fact that he gave up two pairs of goals so quickly that he didn't recover from recovering from the first goal and then giving up the second goal to Craig Adams make it 4-0. It was just I turned it off at that point. Once Bill Guerin scored, made it 3-0. I'm like, there's no way the Caps will pull off another comeback. There's no way.
No.
And I'm like, well, this is done, and I'm not gonna watch Pittsburgh sleepwalk through the rest of this. I just can't do it.
No, and it was, I to me it's this whole where's our when do you play your rookie goalie? In the regular season, I think you have to get these guys ready to take over. And that's the problem when you play these hot hands, and it happens all the time with people like Luongo, with Martin Brodeur. Right. And you wonder when this person goes out, such as Brodeur this year, is their backup going to be ready? Well, with Brodeur, they pull up Clemenson, who had been playing in the AHL, so he was ready. But was Kevin Weeks ready? Well, I think
Kevin Weeks was just Kevin Weeks, who is, you know, he's really a second tier goaltender who was, you know, admittedly streaky, and he's always been that way. Mm-hmm. And he provided for them exactly really what they were paying him.
Mm-hmm.
form, right? And when you look at what happened with the Caps, I mean, Varlamov for the most part spent his the year in Hershey,
right?
And then he was brought up right at the end of the season, and when Theodore, you know, let in a couple of beach balls in game one, Bruce Boudreau went to him, and he was great, he was fantastic, and but really it wasn't even his fault, because I think the Caps just they were not playing defense at all in front of him, and even in game six, how they got out of game six alive, I'm not really sure, yeah. But they did force game seven, and then they just weren't there for him, you know, in any there was no defensive coverage. Mm-hmm. On, you know, the first goal and even the third goal, there was nothing there, and you really can't ask him to continually bail them out like that for four rounds. It's just not going to happen. Eventually, you know, that lack of defensive discipline is going to catch up with you. It's something that I saw moving forward into the conference finals, that Carolina is not giving Pittsburgh those opportunities. Mm-hmm. There was an interview on Puck Daddy this morning with a translation of a Russian interview with Malkin, and he said, you know, our long lead breakout passes are not working. We're not getting the same, you know, kinds of odd man rushes we were getting against Washington, because the Carolina's forwards are too disciplined. They're constant, and at least one of them is constantly thinking defense. And well, yes, and this is how Carolina has gotten as far as they have, and this is why it's going to be a much tougher, much tougher row to hoe for Pittsburgh in this round than it was in round two.
Yeah,
because they really just can't, you know, it was just pretty much all Pittsburgh had to do was play slightly better defense than the Caps, and then leave it up to goaltending.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. And what was the big billing of the Caps? Penn series, it was that these are two offensive powerhouses, but right. You could see as soon as you looked on the paper which one had the better defense, which one frankly had any defense. I mean, when Tom Pody is essentially your number one defenseman, that kind of says something. I mean, you've got Mike Green, but he's going to be there trying to score points from the blue line.
Yeah, he's a rover. He's more of a rover than he is anything else. And you can't. And actually, the problem the Caps were having in round one is that they weren't letting Mike Green be Ryan Green. And it's the way they play. You know. Mm-hmm. And eventually that catches up with you if you don't have if you don't have the forwards coming back and helping that defense out. Once that gap starts,
right?
You know, once the forwards start cheating out of the zone, once they stop coming back a full 200 feet on a team like, you know, a team that's built the way that, you know, the Caps are, it breaks down very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a team like Pittsburgh is too offensively talented and too deep, especially with, you know, just too deep down the middle. And they were very smart in how they applied their forecheck and put pressure on the Caps defense, forced the Caps forwards to come back. And when that wasn't happening, you know, they got their opportunities.
No, absolutely. When I'm looking at Varlamov's stats right now, by the way, for the year, he only played six games in Washington before the before 13 in a row for in the playoffs, and 27 in the AHL. Yeah, 27 in the AHL, but at the same time, six. That's what you're going to, you know, expect this guy to work wonders for 13 in a row, and that's.
No, I don't think anybody expected him to do that. I think that it was a happy surprise that he did so, and unfortunately, you know, you almost at some point probably have to think that maybe they started to rely on the fact that he was going to be, you know, Superman back there.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually catches up with
it. Yeah, it does. And then you look at, like, let's say, again, going back to the Hobby Bullen situation, which we talked about several times, that here's a guy who was put on waivers, who was put on reentry waivers, so he could have been had for half price. They were thinking about, you know, like the word was that he was going to be loaned out to a Russian team, and you know, where's he at now? I mean, he's
what would have happened? Outdueled Luongo.
Yeah,
he's outdueled Luongo, and he's outdueled God, the guy
Kiprusoff.
Kiprusoff. Sorry, thank you. I'm like, so far he's outdueled Kiprusoff and Luongo, two of the preeminent goaltenders in the Western Conference, and you know, he's going to play the wings, and apparently he was unbelievable in Game One,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and this and is frankly, fantastic. It's a great story. Nikolai Halbibol, and this is a great story. It's fantastic to watch him do this. Now, of course, obviously, his contract in Chicago is up at the end of this year. So, you know, let's not kid ourselves. He's 36. This is going to be the last contract that he's going to sign. So he's getting that last opportunity for to sign a 2 or 3 year deal and get one last and have a one last kick at the can on the NHL. So it makes sense. He's in a contract year, so it's normal that guys amp their game up a little bit when they're in their contract season.
No, absolutely. But also part of my point is that if he fails, if he falls, he's got at least an experienced number one goaltender in his to back him up. I mean, Huey may not be what everybody wants or what anybody wants, frankly, and to see. And there's a good reason that Kiprusoff is in right now. But at the same time, you're not turning to a rookie that doesn't have any experience, that isn't played the game with your guys. I think it's more important than sometimes people give it credit for. That's just,
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of goaltenders who are important to their rooms, I read the Pierre LeBrun's article on Chris Osgood, probably the most maligned 3-cup winning goaltender in history, maybe next to his idol, Graham Fuhr.
Yeah.
But only because Fuhr's won 4, I think. So, and it's interesting that a lot of what the quotes from Ken Holland and Osgood, and I really do recommend everybody read that piece today by Pierre LeBrun. It's really good. Osgood's absolutely respected in that room, and he makes the points made in that article that in Detroit, if they win, the skaters get all the credit for winning because they're so talented up front on the blue line, and when they lose, it's always the goaltender's fault, and it's been that way for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's been that way when Joseph was there, or when Hasek was there, or when Osgood was there before, and so it's right or wrong. That's the way. Things are kind of perceived coming out of Detroit. So, it maybe has really tainted our view of how good Chris Osgood's been when he's needed to be, when the games are important. Because, frankly, he was fantastic. I mean, I watched the highlight reel from Game 7, and the saves he made with 3 or 4 minutes left, that flurry of saves he made with like 2 or 3 minutes to go against Anaheim in Game 7, phenomenal, outstanding, game-breaking. Mm-hmm. And that was what put the nail in the Ducks' coffin, finally put the Ducks to bed. I mean, seriously, that was just an unbelievable series of stops.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was just thinking about this. I hadn't realized this. It always seems to be something that crops up with the goalies that I just don't think of. 3 out of the 4 goalies playing right now all have Stanley Cup rings.
Right.
Yeah. It's the only one that doesn't is Marc-Andre Fleury.
Right.
So that's and considering it went all the way last year and
right
to the Stanley Cup Finals.
He was very good in Game 1 against Carolina. Mm-hmm. So
also none of these or how many of these teams had coaching changes this year? 3 out of 4 had coaching changes. So
and 2 of them at very opportune times, and because of the coaching change, actually, is you can almost make the argument that that was why they made the playoffs.
Yeah,
I mean, talking about Carolina, I think Carolina is like 25-11-4 since February or something, some insane stat like that. So,
Penguins are the same way. They had an amazing streak after they changed coaches.
Yep. So, it's going to be Penguins and Carolina is going to be a good series, and I don't doubt that that series goes either 6 or 7 games, even with Eric Cole out from that ridiculous knee-on-knee that Matt Cook threw, which is the history between Cole and Orpik and everything that was all on display in Game 1, and then it culminates with the goal getting called off and then Cole getting taken out by Matt Cook.
Right. Yeah. And
at the end of the third period, it was so obvious. I mean, might as well have plastered the nameplate Tucker on the back of his friggin' jersey, for Christ's sake. It was horrible.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't think there's going to be any suspension over it, because if you suspend him, then why didn't you suspend Ovechkin? I think the same thing's going to happen with us. You can sucker punch anybody in this Stanley Cup in the rest of these playoffs. because if you, you know, if somebody gets suspended for a sucker punch, well, why didn't you suspend Walker, who scored the game winner against the Bruins?
Yeah. So, you're all, first you're allowed to sucker punch a guy, and then you're allowed to score the series clinching goal in overtime.
Right. So where's your precedent set? Well, yeah. You know, which one are you going to pay attention to this time? That's aggravating. That's really aggravating. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I'm just thinking about it. I read an article about, or it was a blog or something about Zdeno Chara, mm-hmm. and how the writer, and I don't remember his name, was talking about how he thought that he saw something, or he finally saw the limit of Zdeno Chara. Mm. That, you know, when you expected, you know, it's game seven is when the great players should rise to the occasion and do what they needed to do. And we kind of saw the limit of Zdeno Chara in the series against Carolina, is at least was his argument. Now, let's take that back a few steps and let's think about that quote unquote great Ottawa Senators team that was ripped apart by bankruptcy and then the salary cap and everything else. Have any of those guys won a cup? Mm. Daniel Alfredson? No. Braid Redden? No, yeah. They're calling for New York. They're wishing they can get rid of Redden's contract. Now Chara is able to take Boston only two rounds deep. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Marian Hossa still hasn't won a cup. Had to go to the Wings in order to get a chance at one. You know, let's put it all together, and you think to yourself, those great Ottawa Senators teams that kept losing to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't the goaltender's fault.
Yeah. The one, you know, the team that took it to the finals and then basically just gave up.
Yeah, basically imploded to the Ducks. Yeah, exactly.
By the way, when you were talking about that, I started thinking, okay, but who was the more injured team at this point? You know, we're just not going to know. I was thinking back to post I saw on Japers Rink about Jeff mm-hmm. Schultz and having a broken rib. And there were a couple of Bruins, one of the Bruins, I think, had a couple of broken ribs. And I just cannot imagine how you play with broken ribs. That's just astounding to me that these guys will go through that and that we never know until it's all said and done. Was it Kessler's going out for surgery?
Kessel.
Kessel, thank you. And I mean, there's just all kinds of
Kessel, Krejci, mm-hmm. I think even Bergeron. It was obvious. When I was watching Game 7, it was obvious that Carolina still had plenty of jump. I was actually sitting there going, "Yeah, look, it's another Carolina Hurricanes team that's going to go injury free throughout the entire playoff run, while the other team while they slowly grind the other teams into dust." And it was obvious that Boston was hurting. Mm-hmm. They looked tired. They looked a step slower. I was watching that game going, there's no way they're gonna score in overtime. There's no way. If they do, it's going to be on a complete fluke they'll win this series. Mm-hmm. Because they just didn't have – it just didn't look like they had the energy. Everybody looked like they were skating hurt, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And all of the forwards looked like they were skating hurt. And then I had to, you know, suppress that that sentiment when I think as Carolina lost both Brind'Amour and somebody else late in that game. I don't know if I think they played game one, but they you know, the injury bug is now starting to finally hit Carolina.
Right.
We'll see how they respond to it.
And it doesn't ever seem to. I mean, there have been people in and out of it for the Red Wings, but it doesn't ever, you know, doesn't seem to hit that often for them. And frankly, I would have expected the Ducks to beat them up a little bit more, especially in a losing effort. But I guess that's the way the game seven sometimes plays out.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, Detroit plays that great puck possession game, and they're very smart with the puck, and they keep themselves in. You know, the Wings are, and they're very smart with the puck, and you know, they don't put themselves in a position to get hit a lot. And the guys who do are the guys who were supposed to be getting hit. So, yeah.
Well, you have to be smart with the puck when you have, you know, Chris Osgood in net. I mean, God, the guy's a. Oh, sorry, never mind. Yeah.
Well, you also have to be. You have to be smart with the puck. With, by the way, they're on balance the smallest team in the NHL,
mm-hmm. and the least, you know, and take the least fighting majors. Mm-hmm. You know, they just play. You know, it's a very, very good talented game.
Yep.
You know, I can't stand them, but they play a very good, talented, high energy game. And
They do, and they're very disciplined, and they're very well coached.
Smart, and cannot stand them one bit.
Yep, me either. So, me either. Yeah. Guy I work with is from Detroit. He's it's like the only, you know, he loves them to death. His entire house is, you know, he's got a shrine to the Red Wings in his house, apparently. And I'm like, congratulations, damn it.
I had to be in Detroit a year and a half ago over the holidays. And the apartment that we were renting, as soon as we walked in, there was a picture on the wall of like an old time Red Wings team. And there was a Red Wings blanket. And I just opened a drawer, dropped them in, and never opened the drawer again. this is not going to happen.
Hockey fans just aren't like other fans.
No. I didn't set the place on fire, at least. I mean, that was nice, but damn it, that I was not going to sit there and look at that. That wasn't going to happen.
I applaud your self-control.
Thank you. Thank you. It was difficult. You know what? I'll be honest with you. I'm a hockey fan. I love hockey in all of its forms. I love going to kids' games and, you know, minor league games especially. But frankly, the way that these, you know, sometimes it's just like, man, if it weren't for the damn podcast, I wouldn't watch a game right now. I'm not trying to be a jerk or anything. I'm not trying to, you know, but God, sometimes just, oh no, do I have to watch this game? Do I really have to watch tonight?
and you know, let's talk about, we've talked about anything. What about the just amazing fail on the part of the Vancouver Canucks? Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't give up four goals in the third period of a game, which you're facing elimination.
Yeah. I mean, in a 7-5 game. I mean, that's the thing. It wasn't just like 4-3. It was a 7-5 game.
I know. What is it? You can either play offense or you can play defense, but you can't do both.
Apparently. Well, you know, I've never looked at their defensive core and thought, wow, you know, Sammy Salo and Matthias Olin. There you go. That's your, that's
no, star-studded. No, come on now. Willie Mitchell, Kevin Bieksa. I really like the Canucks' defense. The issue is whether or not they can, you know, the issue is not their defense. The issue is whether or not they can open up their game and play offense and still get back in coverage. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is what it boils down to with the Canucks. The Canucks can either play complete shutdown or they can open it up. And it's they can't seem to play it in between. They can't seem to play that complete game.
Yeah.
And the Blackhawks, I mean, they're just playing on pure chutzpah at this point. And that is a great story. And everything that surrounding the Chicago Blackhawks is a great story. The television ratings are through the roof. The city's behind. City loves them. How could you not? You know, I mean, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a Blackhawks fan in any way. But you got to love what's happening this postseason for the market, for everything. You know,
yeah, their fans are finally excited and getting back to the game. And there's nothing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that team. That, you know, as unfortunately Mike Babcock was pointing out, that they're going to run into cap issues when. And we've talked about this. I think I've also talked with Eric McElhinney about this, that, you know, you got three young guys, Kane, Taze, and Sharp, and they're all going to expect to get paid after their, rookie contracts are up. If you can, if UA can step into his own and you can get a cheap backup, well, you can pay at least two out of the three, you know, but you're probably not going to be able to pay all three. So, cap issues with that team eventually.
And that's not even counting the coming out party that is Brett Seabrook, Duncan Keith, Dustin Byfuglien. Can we continue to go down the list? I mean, you know, this is a tremendous upsurge and what's happening in Chicago. And I don't see how they can keep the entire team together.
Oh, and don't forget Versteeg either.
I'm sorry. Yeah, let's not forget the Calder Trophy candidate. I'm sorry. Where was my head?
Exactly.
Lose my own head neck if I could.
Oh, that's pretty funny because that's a good, you know, that's a good point.
Oops.
Oh wait, sorry, do you mean we Black left Hawks somebody fans. Out?
I didn't mean to leave anybody out. It's just, you know, after a while, my brain can only, like, you know, can only process so many great names.
Jeez. And you know, you've already got the large contract of Brian Campbell, on your books, and that's going to stifle you eventually.
It's going to have to go. Is what's going to have to happen. I have a distinct feeling. Well, it's going to have to go. I don't see him staying in that.
What's he at? $7 million. I don't remember.
8 years, $56 million, or 52, something insane. Yeah, it's an insane $7 million a year cap hit. Jeez.
Yeah, I don't. That.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I'm really hoping, because this is what got the Avalanche into trouble. This is you know, that you don't. 1 year you don't really do much of anything in the free agency, and then all of a sudden you're expected to do everything in free agency. Mm-hmm. And I can't agree with it at this point, not just because of Campbell, but because of other teams. Like, I take a look at the Avalanche when they signed Ryan Smith and they signed Scott Hannon. And if they'd signed just Smith, that would have been enough. Just let it go, build from within at that point. You know, you probably could have afforded to keep a few younger guys or whatnot, but you know, in your defensive core. But instead, they shoot the wad, and because it's free agency and because it's first day free agency, they overpay.
Well, and even worse.
And I'm going to see that happen a lot. I think that's my point. Well, it happened with Campbell. I think it's going to keep happening until people start to smarten up a little bit, and maybe in another 5 years, the salary cap era starts to thin itself out a little bit, and it gets closer to like we say when teams are really winning and then finally fall back. It gets closer to the mean.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about the Campbell contract, and I was thinking about, you know, what Dale Talon was thinking and signing him to that, considering, you know, what he had in the pipeline. It's not like he didn't have, you know, top defensive prospects in his pipeline. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that always really confused me. And but it's like everything else. Maybe it's the simple fact that it's the confluence of all these people showing up at the same time, and you know, how certain players are complementary to each other and everything else that causes, you know, all of these kids to all grow up together all at one time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the fact that they hired Joel Quenneville and he got the most out of all of them. I don't, you know. So at the end of the day, it's an odd. I always thought it was an odd signing. Because it's, you know, it's not like their cupboard was bare,
right?
On defense. I mean, maybe the conventional wisdom was that, you know, these guys were still maybe a year or two away. But then you don't sign Campbell to an 8-year contract if you know, Seabrook and Keith and company and Wisniewski. Because, I mean, remember, they had James Wisniewski at that point too. Mm-hmm. It just never seemed right to me. But
well, you know, also the other thing, and something you and I have talked about before, is the. How seriously do you take the minor league system? And frankly, I don't know how seriously they took their system when they had the Norfolk Admirals.
That's true.
You know, down in Norfolk, Virginia. They did have a decent core down there, but were they paying any attention to it? For, you know, in reality, I can't really say, but we've also seen some of these other teams that had the benefit of having these young stars that we've been really impressed with get that benefit year of the lockout, mm-hmm. playing in the AHL when the AHL was pretty much the top tier league in the US. Right. And, you know, you see how much that helped out the Carolina Hurricanes, for instance. I mean,
exactly.
That helped them greatly. So
it helped a great number of teams. You know, helped my Sabres a tremendous amount, but I don't know. Speaking of AHL teams, so we had the hearing today of the Phoenix Coyotes.
Speaking of AHL teams, nice.
Well, it's true. It is. And, you know, that's the scenario. Mm-hmm. And so we had the just before we went on, we got the final word from the judge, mm-hmm. that he wants the NHL and, I guess, Jerry Moyes to come to a decision in mediation as to who actually controls the team. That was reported at 6:39 by Mark Spector at Sportsnet.ca. Glendale lawyer, I'll just read off with Spector's got Glendale lawyer handing out copies of lease agreement. It's the size of the NHL guide and record book.
Mm-hmm.
6:58, Moyes' lawyers want deadline ordered June 23rd for a sale hearing, June 30th to close, or they'll lose Balsillie's bid. judge says we need to decide if the team is portable before any auction is held. Focus switching from control to location. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And that's just the most recent stuff. I mean, there's still...
And that's the most recent stuff as of, you know, as of we're recording this now. It's 20 after 7 on Tuesday night.
Well, I think that the issue... One of the things that came up was that the judge wants the NHL and the Vasily Moyes team to go into mediation on the issue of who has been in control of the team when, right, and especially when it entered bankruptcy. I'm not exactly sure how you mediate that. That's going to be it's one side or the other. Yeah.
I own the team. No, I own the team. I'm in control.
Yeah. I don't see how that's going to, how mediation really helps that. It seems like, you know, you either look at the books and the rules or whatnot, and the judge obviously isn't going to decide anything today. But one of the interesting questions that kind of, and you and I were talking about this a little bit about, and was answered in a Myrtle post. One of the things that the judge asked was, why didn't the Balsillie Moyes group take their proposal to the NHL? Why did they go through this whole rigmarole of bankruptcy and the like? And Balsillie kind of answers that.
Yeah, it was a post that James Myrtle's from The Rink dated the 15th. Actually, this is pretty old news, but it's still important, which is that there is no front door. That his pretty much his argument is that there was no way for him to walk through the front door and say, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. This is what we'd like to do, and this is what there was no option on the table for this because let's see. Well, the quote is, I'll tell you, I'm a resourceful guy. This is Jim Balsillie. I'm a thoughtful guy. Yes, I'm smart on these things. I figure out these situations very quickly. It's a strength of mine, and I'm telling you, this situation, I've looked at it back, forward, every which way, every engagement. There is no front door here. There is no front door. And so we had to go to a side door. I could think of no other way to get this on the agenda. There was no other team coming to Canada. There was no other team coming to Southern Ontario. No chance, and certainly not Hamilton guaranteed. Basically, you know, but this is what he wants to do, and he's got a lot of people behind him and a lot of support behind him to bring a team to Hamilton or Guelph or Waterloo or wherever. Mm-hmm. And given the situation that it's only going to get worse, you and I have been speaking about this all season long. I've been talking about this for 3 years now that this was coming. When the housing market was going to go belly up and was going to go busto, Phoenix was going to be first on the list and Miami was going to be second because those are the two of the most overbuilt markets in the country.
Yeah.
With some of the worst foreclosure rates. And we haven't even seen the beginnings of we're only beginning to see the beginnings of the commercial real estate meltdown, which is going to hit Phoenix like a double hurricane. Oh, yeah.
And it's going to hit Glendale, which is in the middle of absolutely nowhere.
Nowhere. Yeah. I don't even understand why the NHL is fighting this from an economic inevitability. Mm-hmm. Perspective. You got a guy, he's Canadian, he's richer than you can imagine, he's legitimately profitable, unlike most of the other ownership groups that the NHL has courted in spite of him. Mm-hmm. And he wants a team in the hottest market in hockey market in the world.
Yeah, no, it's
I don't see the downside.
I can see really is that the other owners aren't going to get paid. If it was sure. expansion, they would all be getting a nice fat check in
right.
overblown expansion fees, which they've seen before, which frankly is an additional cost that nobody really wants. And if they were smart, if they were really smart, they would think about the difference between what Phoenix is going to suck up from their coffers versus, you know, and how much an expansion fee would go towards that rather than do we just get Phoenix out from under the rest of the league's books, which is pretty much what it's doing. It's just money for everybody.
I mean, honestly, if it was just that, mm-hmm. close the franchise and expand. Yeah. Go through the legal fiction of it. Close and end the Phoenix franchise and have Balsillie cough up an extra, you know, $85 million, whatever the franchise fees are, and put the team there.
Right.
And then he didn't have to go through that process. The only downside that I can really see is an article that was in the New York Times Slapshot blog a couple of days ago about what Balsillie means by Southern Ontario. So dated May 16th, he's talking about the possibility of it seriously impacting the Buffalo Sabres. It's mm-hmm. not going to impact the Toronto Maple Leafs, but it could impact the Sabres. Because Hamilton, they're within the 50-mile radius of the non-compete. They're within 50 miles of the HSBC Arena, and therefore he would owe them infringement rights, whatever you want to call it. He's going to have to pay them some kind of – he's going to have to pay Buffalo in some way to be able to operate in Hamilton. If he moves to Guelph or Waterloo, though, he's outside the 50-mile radius, and then he only has to deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right.
And part of the argument, at least that this writer's making, this would be is that that would that Jeff Klein is making in this is that – that would gain the NHL Hamilton at the expense of Buffalo. And that would be bad because Buffalo is, for better or worse, one of the best hockey markets in the NHL's.
Oh, arsenal. It'd absolutely be for the worst, in my opinion. I mean, there's no reason to hurt Buffalo, but at the same time, you've got a hockey-mad market up there. I'm having a hard time seeing why there isn't space for another team up there if all the talk is also about putting a second team in Toronto.
I'm not sure, but I can tell you that I think that the argument is, and I'm not sure, you can read the article for yourself and you can draw your own conclusions, but that up to 15% of Buffalo's revenue, as meager as it is, comes from the same area that that any team in Hamilton would be drawing from as well. Well, in my mind, that just means that the city of Buffalo has to do that the Sabres have to do a better job of marketing to northern Pennsylvania and the rest of western and eastern and more central New York and everything else, and they that's what they have to do. Look, the Canadian dollar's headed back up again, and probably for good this time. And that's going to help the Sabres' bottom line far more than anything else, to be honest with you. So I don't see how it's anything other than the win-win. I think if he moves to Hamilton's Cops Arena, if this all works out and they move to Hamilton's Cops Arena, it's going to work out just fine for Buffalo because they're going to get a cut of the Hamilton Coyotes revenue. Mm-hmm. Or in some way, manner, shape, or form. If he moves them to Guelph or Waterloo and they don't, well, then, they're going to have to work that much harder, and that's okay too. I'm all for that.
Yeah,
even as a Buffalo fan, I'm all for that because it just makes sure that then the Sabres have to be an even better organization in order to.
Well, and they're going to sell out a few survive. More dates at their at their place. Maybe yes to fans from across the border, but they're going to sell those dates for certain. It's not
The other thing, what I'm saying is that if the Sabres. At some point you have to say, you have to be a better organization. And that means if you continually win,
right,
then you're going to draw people into the building. And so that means if you're a better run organization, the revenue is going to take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the argument. I know I can hear Larry Quinn standing over my shoulder saying, but fine. I argue with me otherwise.
Yeah.
Be a better organization and you will survive.
Well, and chances are if Balsillie also owns this team, he can get basically Wayne Gretzky out from under his books as well, who is basically a money pit at this point. I mean, I hate to think of the great one as being a money pit, but tell me it isn't true.
Well, it's one of the conditions that Jerry Reinsdorf has put into his proposal to buy the Coyotes in the first place, is that if I come in, Gretz must go.
Yeah. And frankly, that's not a bad thing. I mean, he hasn't shown really a lot of flair as a coach. He hasn't, they haven't really won under him. And he's the most expensive coach out there.
Yeah. Honestly, if they really want to make it work in Phoenix, if Gretzky wanted to stay the coach, Gretzky could just, agree to renegotiate his salary.
Mm-hmm.
Based on a performance,
I think he's going to have to, anyways.
Most probably,
yeah.
So, that'll be I don't think that's. Yeah, I think Gretzky is the least interesting portion of the story.
Yeah.
honestly. So
no, we'll see how it all works out. One quick thing I wanted to bring up real fast. There is a report. I love using that word because it starts with R. So does rumor that Patrick Waugh possibly was offered a job with the Avalanche as coach, which is hilarious because we already have a coach.
Yes,
even though, I know. It's not. Yeah, and they haven't. They at least as far as anybody knows, considering how mum the word is around here, that Granato has not been let go as head coach of the Avalanche. But at the same time, there still is a GM
vacancy.
Yeah, which is conventional wisdom at this point has that Pierre Lacroix is going to go back into the GMing business. And try and fix the team, but
well, as Wyshynski pointed out, actually, was that Tony Granato is still the coach, but you never know; he might get that all important vote of confidence.
Yeah,
which means you know that he's going to be fired tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if I want that particular vote of confidence.
Apparently, Patrick Waugh has actually denied the report that he's received the head coaching offer from Colorado. That's the official news at this point.
Yeah, that's and you know, mum's the word, and that's kind of the norm around here where, you know, Joe Sackett goes in for surgery and then, you know, and then it's reported to the public that he had a successful surgery. And you go, hey, wait a minute, what? Can we roll that back a little bit?
Yeah, can we roll that back? Yes. I thought you were supposed to tell us that he was going in for surgery before he actually had it.
Exactly. That doesn't happen around here. But, you know, I'm still kind of taking odds with, you know, taking issue with the conventional wisdom that Patrick Waugh would be the right guy to coach. At this point, I mean, it's just, you know, hey, stick him down in Lake Erie for a season, you know, do something right. Other than, but why is he supposed to be the big coach?
I don't know. I have no idea. I cannot tell you.
Ooh. And also, by the way, on our, as we're recording this, updates are coming in from the, court proceedings in Glendale. The lawyer for the city of Glendale just admitted that he has never been to a Coyotes game. You know, I know this all started after the season, but you know,
oh,
I mean, there isn't much else going on in Glendale. The football season is over.
Oh my God! Yeah, and the city of Glendale is going to sue because they, you know, this whole thing is just a mess. Wow. Oh well.
I also like this. They want an auction process, perhaps. They're talking about it. And the NHL wants to okay bidders first, then have an auction to the NHL approved bidders. So. Now, considering the last several, I don't even remember where we saw this. Some the last several ownership groups, people and that we've had involved, how many have gone to jail for fraud? How many have been investigated? How many? I mean, this is just. Was it Boots just got just admitted or pled guilty to fraud? And, you know, here we are weighing more approval process. You got a guy with real cold, hard cash.
It's going to pay cash for the team.
Yeah.
Jerry Moyes is only going to ask for $100 out of the $300 million they sunk into the team. You should consider yourself lucky. Yeah. You're only getting out for this.
Oh, my.
But we don't want to look bad.
You know, okay, and as soon as I want to stop, you know, watching the Stanley Cup playoffs because I'm not happy where it's going, or I'm getting a little, you know, maybe even a little bit fried out at times from having to watch, you know, some teams that I really don't care for winning. Then we get something like this, and it just makes it so much more entertaining to do this podcast. I got to tell you, sometimes I think to myself, "Oh, do we have to?" And then I see stuff like this, I go, "Okay, I'm in. All right, this is good.
Yeah, I'm in. Double or nothing. Fine, I'm all in. Yeah, fine. Yeah, I've got pocket aces. Let's do it.
All right, James. Don't be surprised if I call you up for another special report, considering all that's happening. It is finally coming down fast and furious with the Coyotes situation. And
sounds good. I'll be here.
Stay strong, my friend.
Okay, I will. Be good.
Talk to you later. So much for episode 34 of The Rink. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find our Twitter feed, subscribe to us on iTunes, find links to some of the things we talked about, and leave us comments about anything that you heard here on The Rink. If you want to email us, that's at therink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks for listening to The Rink.